free speech. Free speech. There is no value that perhaps unifies all Americans more than the value of free speech. There are both those on the left and those on the right who come together over free speech. But here's where we are. Last week, I proposed the idea that true freedom is not the absence of restraint, but finding the limitations that are most liberating to who we really are. Let me explain that complicated idea just very quickly. Just as a fish is most free in whatever water it's meant to be, so we're going to use Goldie again. Goldie is not free in the absence of restraint. You can't put Goldie on land. You can't put him in salt water. You can't put him in the sky. Goldie is most free when he's in a freshwater pond, and then Goldie can swim and make friends and go to school, and Goldie can be who Goldie was meant to be. But he has to find the proper limitations. As Christians and as children of God, we must find the proper moral constraints that allow us to fulfill our true human nature. True freedom is not the absence of restraint. True freedom is finding the limitations that most liberate us to follow our God-given nature. Here's then my question. What is free speech? What is free speech? As we begin this sermon, let's understand this is, while perhaps a value that many Americans are focused around and would unify around, this in the university setting is the most contested idea that we have. A couple ideas I'm going to give you, a couple of analogies. 2 years ago, Heather McDonald, she is a right of center columnist, was supposed to speak at Claremont University in California. As she was going to speak on relationships between police and minority communities, her speech was shut down by demonstrators claiming that it was hate speech. She, over the last 2 years, has presented various speeches. She's been a part of various forums, all questioning the idea, what is free speech? Another example, Dr. Steven Pinker, he's a professor of psychology at Harvard University, a brilliant, brilliant man. He has gotten involved in the last few years on the idea of free speech. This is an article he wrote in 2015. I would like to read you just a couple of paragraphs from it. More than two centuries after the freedom of speech was enshrined in the First Amendment of the Constitution, that right is very much in the news. Campus speech codes, disinvited commencement speakers, jailed performance artists, exiled leakers, a blogger condemned to 1,000 lashes by one of our closest allies, and the massacre of the French cartoonists have forced the democratic world to examine the roots of its commitment to free speech. Is free speech merely a symbolic talisman like a national flag or motto? Is it just one of the many values that we trade off against each other? Was Pope Francis right when he said that you cannot make fun of the faith of others? May universities muzzle the students to provide the sensibility of others? Did the Charlie Hebdo cartoonist cross the line that separates free speech from toxic talk? As the dean of a school of journalism recently opined, or is free speech fundamental? A right which, if not absolute, should not be abrogated only to carefully circumscribed causes. The answer is that free speech is indeed fundamental. It's important to remind ourselves why and to have the reasons at our fingertips when the right is called into question. Dr. Pinker, who, by the way, is very left of center, has come out over the last few years in great defense of free speech. Both those on the left and those on the right in the political spectrum in our country are wanting to reinforce the value of free speech in the university setting within the greater societal context. You can actually get on YouTube and watch. There is a panel between Heather McDonald, Dr. Pinker, and Howard Dean about free speech. It's 2 hours long, but it's fascinating to watch. What is free speech? What I would like to do this morning is I would like to engage this national dialogue about free speech, but I would like to do so not from a constitutional or legislative perspective. I would like to examine it from a biblical perspective. Taking this idea that I proposed last week, that true freedom is not the absence of limitation, but rather is finding the limitation that most liberates who we really are, what then is, from a biblical perspective, free speech? Well, I'm going to get communication professor on you just for a second. That's what my doctorate's in, so I can every once in a while. Communication, I'm going to give you a big, long definition of what communication really is. Communication is the interactive process of exchanging meaning through messages. What is communication? Communication is not just the sending and receiving of messages. It's not just like baseball where you play catch. Communication is ultimately about the exchange of meaning through messages. And so, when we look at communication, for us then to reach the full potential of communication, what we are going to do is maximize the meaning. Let me go back and explain what I mean. It sounds very theoretical, but it's very practical. A fish is most free when it's in a pond. We are most free, not when we're saying whatever we want to say, but rather whenever we are saying what we actually mean. Do you see what I mean? Ha ha. True freedom is communicating how you need to communicate, making your meaning clear, making your message clear. That's true communication. So how are we going to approach the sermon this morning? Communication scholars would agree on this. There are two dimensions of communication. There's the content meaning dimension and the style dimension. The content dimension of communication is what is said. The style dimension is how it's said. We understand this, right? If I say, for example, Kirby, I'm glad to see you today. How I see, it's good to see you today. That's content. Kirby, it's good to see you today. Do you see how my style changed? It's good to see you today versus it's good to see you today. The content's the same, but the style's different. For us to maximize and make clear our meaning through our messages, we are then going to maximize the clarity of both our content and our style. So I'll stop being communication professor and start being preacher. How does this apply? I think, and this is why I love the Bible so much, the Bible is going to provide the clearest of answers to the most theoretical and the most practical of problems. How do we maximize and make clear our meaning? Well, let's go to the Bible. Let's see what the Bible says. First of all, how do we communicate in the most free manner that allows our meaning to be clear? Well, our content needs to be clear. Look at Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25 with me. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25. Therefore, having put away all falsehood, let each of you speak the truth with his neighbor, for we are members one of another. What should be the content of free speech? What should be the content of speech that ultimately reaches full fulfilled meaning? Let each of you speak the truth. Let each of you speak the truth. Now, this idea is not novel to the New Testament at all, nor is it novel to Pauline theology. Even just a few verses earlier, look up at Ephesians 4:15, a very common verse from our theme verse for the year. Rather speaking the truth in love, Colossians 3 verse 9, likewise admonishes us that we need to put away falsehood and then put on truth. Here then is the point. What needs to be the content of true free speech? Free speech is not just saying whatever I want to say. Free speech is not just saying whatever comes to my mind. Free speech is not just saying whatever thought just randomly comes to me, but rather truth is what makes our meaning clear. For us to engage in true free speech, it is following the biblical precedent of truth. Why? Why is truth so critical to free speech? Well, I'd like for us to turn to Matthew chapter 12 together. Let's go to Matthew chapter 12 together. We'll come back to Ephesians in a minute, but let's look at Matthew chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12. I know our sermon this morning has been theoretical, but please follow with me. Please follow. We're going to get very practical here in a few minutes. Look at Matthew chapter 12 with me. Matthew chapter 12, verse 36. I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word, or perhaps your translation may say idle word, that they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. What are these idle words that Jesus is speaking about? There's much speculation about these idle words. There's many commentators who would say that these idle words are joking. That, you know, it's just joking. You're not being serious. So good communication needs to be serious, sober, somber speech. Well, look at the context. If you go up just a few verses to verse 25, this is the context of the passage. When the Pharisees heard it, that is the words of Jesus, they said, "It is only by Beelzebub, the prince of demons, that this man cast out demons." Knowing their thoughts, Jesus said to them, we'll stop there. What did the Pharisees do? They spoke an idle word. They spoke a careless word. Here, Jesus is proclaiming that he has the ability to do miracles by the very power of God. The Pharisees are claiming, no, it is only by Beelzebub, the prince of demons, that this man cast out demons. What are they claiming? Their mouths are letting loose idle words. Their mouths are letting loose flat-out lies. And because of this, what's happened? Their meaning, what they are seeking to say, and what they actually think are muddled because of lies. Go with me over to John chapter 8 as well. So again, if you look at Matthew chapter 8, the idle words that Jesus talks about, that's not just joking, it's not sarcasm, it's nothing like that, but it's just saying just flippant, non-thoughtful lies that have no grounding in truth. John chapter 8, verse 44. "You are of your father the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies." Now let's get practical here. According to a constitutional perspective, free speech would just be saying whatever I think I want to say. I'm actually going to take just one quick tangent. Typically within free speech, the analogy that you've probably heard is, well, free speech has its limits. And that is, you can't go into a fire, you can't go into a movie theater and holler fire. We've probably all heard that in a civic class at some time. That is the worst analogy that you can ever use. Let me tell you why. That idea of, that analogy, you can't run into a movie theater and scream fire, that was actually introduced during World War I as objectors to the war. What that individual was saying is, objectors to the war have no right to speak because what they're doing is they're causing alarm in our society. But then, of course, we understand, well, no, of course they had a right to object. So, though, we have to understand our context. But what then is true free speech? True free speech is not running into a movie theater and hollering fire. True free speech is running into a movie theater and speaking truth. Why? Because when we speak truth, our meaning is clear. When we speak truth, the content of our messages are clear. When we speak truth, there is no question about what we mean. Let me give you two negative examples. A few years ago in the social sciences, there was a huge controversy about a Dutch psychologist. His name is Diederik Stapel. Sounds like Diederik Stapel, I know. But Diederik Stapel. His name is now renowned within social sciences because he falsified data in a couple of his studies. Essentially, he lied in a couple of his studies. Since then, he had published, to date, 55 articles. Every single one of his articles has now been retracted. He lost his professorship. He had to pay legal fees and he had to pay a fine, all because he falsified data. Now, from one perspective, that was just a white lie. It was just a fib. But what's the problem? When his speech was filled with lies, we don't know if we can trust anything that he says. Because if he's lied in one of his articles, if he lied in one of his studies, how can I trust anything that he said? Another example, my sister growing up played softball with a girl who was the biggest fibber that ever was. And y'all know what I mean by a fibber? We could say something to the effect of, yeah, we grilled last night. What did you do? Oh, my daddy has two grills and he grilled four different types of steak last night. We went to the park yesterday. What did you do? Oh, my daddy built that park. That's what he did. He built that park. Yeah, we're going to go see a baseball game here in a few days. Oh, yeah, baseball. Like, my daddy used to play baseball, and then my mommy also used to play softball, and actually, they both are in the Hall of Fame. She had these little just fibs. I think she was very self-conscious and tried to overcompensate because of it. But these little fibs, what happened? It came to the point you couldn't trust one little word that came out of her mouth. Now, was it free constitutionally? Yes. We're not going to lock her up in our jails because she told a fib. Legally, she can say that her daddy built the playground and is in the Hall of Fame. Legally, we're not going to lock her up for it so long as she's not perjuring herself. But spiritually, is that free speech? No, because what happened? You couldn't trust a word that she said. When we constrain ourselves by the limitation of truth, when our intention is to go in accordance with the biblical standard of truth, and when our mouths are filled with content of truth, what then happens? Our meaning is clear. We're believable. We're trustworthy. What we have is then free to fulfill its God-given potential of meaning. We are no more free in our speech than when we are speaking truth. We are no more free in our communication than when our mouths are filled with truth. True free speech is not just saying whatever I want to say. True free speech is the speaking of truth. What about then the style of free speech? The style of free speech. Free speech is not just what we say. Free speech is also how we say it. Go with me back to the book of Ephesians, please. Ephesians chapter 4. Look at Ephesians chapter 4 with me. So again, free speech is not just saying whatever I want to say. Free speech is not just saying whatever I plan to say. True free speech is speaking truth. Look at Ephesians 4, verse 29. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouth, but only as such is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. And do not grieve the Holy Spirit by whom you were sealed for the day of redemption. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and slander be put away from you along with all malice. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. What should then be our style of free speech? Well, our free speech is that which fits the occasion. Look with me back to verse 29. Let no corrupting talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good and builds up as fits the occasion. Now again, let's see, the spiritual basis of free speech is not the same as the legal standards of free speech. Constitutionally, I can speak however I want to speak. If I want to have a cuss word come out of every other word of my mouth, legally I can do so. Within certain domains. If I want to be hateful and vengeful and volatile in what I say, legally I can do so. But spiritually, and I would argue most realistically, what is free speech? But that which is good and building up as fits the occasion. True free speech is that which is good and fits the occasion. One other verse I'd like for us to look at in Ephesians. Look at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 4. Let there be no filthiness, nor foolish talk, nor crude joking, which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. James 3, with our tongue we can curse and we can bless. What should we do? We should bless. Go with me to Proverbs chapter 15. Proverbs chapter 15. The book of Proverbs is filled with maxims of speech, but let's look at just one. Proverbs chapter 15, verse 23. To make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good that is. What is true free speech? True free speech is that which is good for the occasion. It is that which is seasoned for life. To make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is. It is words that fit the occasion. May I put it another way? Wisdom and graciousness make our words meaningful. wisdom and graciousness. Be turning with me to Colossians chapter 4. Colossians chapter 4. Again, why? When our tongues are seasoned with graciousness, when our words are filled with wisdom, when the style of our communication is filled with grace, that's when we're going to be meaningful. Let me explain this with a couple of metaphors and analogies. During this whole debate about free speech, one of the most famous was Milo Yiannopoulos. I may have said his last name incorrectly. But Milo went to speak at Berkeley. And there were riots at Berkeley for about a week and tons of devastation done. Milo, if you've ever heard of him, is known for his radical and outlandish claims. He is a far, 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 far right-winger who has the most radical and obnoxious and baseless and absolutely disgusting of styles. He speaks of sexual acts in ways that I cannot even begin to describe. He uses language that has no business coming from a Christian's mouth. And his style is filled with so much hate that I disgust me to even think of it. Now, constitutionally, is that free speech? Yes. But is his speech meaningful? Absolutely not. He can say whatever he wants to say, but his speech has no meaning. Why? Because he opens his mouth and what happens? Everybody's eyes start rolling. Our ears are closed. He has no meaning to what he says. Our ears are already closed because I have no desire to listen to what he has said. His style has prohibited the true purpose and the true ability and even the potential of his speech. Our speech and our meaning and our messages can reach their true potential only when they are seasoned by wisdom and grace. Do you know anyone that when they just start speaking, your eyes just start rolling and you just close your ears because you know, oh great, what complaining's going to be today? What vitriolic language is going to come from their mouth today? What angry words are going to be spewing from them today? Great. Now, are they saying whatever they want to say? Absolutely. But are their words meaningful? Are they reaching the full God-given potential of speech? Absolutely not. The biblical standard for free speech allows us to reach the true meaning of speech. It allows us to reach the potential of speech. Let me now give you a positive example. I want to give you a positive example. Look at Colossians 4 with me. Colossians chapter 4, verse 5. Walk in wisdom toward outsiders, making the best use of your time. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know how you ought to answer each person. I referenced this verse a few weeks ago and didn't do it justice. I want to look back at it. This idea of salt in the verse is a bit different from how it's used in Matthew 5. Here, seasoning with salt means our speech is appropriate and appealing. Our speech is appropriate and appealing. Our speech needs to be, using a Greek word, witty. We need to be wise in the way that we talk. When I was at Florida College in my second semester, I had a really rough first month. I had lost two relatives the previous quarter. And even over Christmas break, one of my relatives had passed away very, very suddenly. It was a very emotionally tough month. About a month into the semester, I just had a breakdown. I had been under so much emotional stress, I just had a breakdown. One of my friends, it was not Grayson, so I won't throw Grayson under the bus. But one of my good friends at the time, I went to his room to try to talk to him. Have you prayed about it? Have you prayed about it? You just need more faith. You just need to pray about it. Now, again, this is an 18-year-old. I know, I'm sorry, Sabrina, I'm going to pick on 18-year-olds again. Yes, he was an 18-year-old. And actually, he had never even lost any relative before. He had no wisdom in how to deal with that situation at all. And for those of us who've experienced grieving, you know the thing you do not tell a grieving person, just pray about it. Just pray about it and all your cares will go away. Just pray about it and there'll be some supernatural cause and just take it all away. Three other friends came into the room. They had no clue. I was bawling. I don't bawl very often, but I was bawling. They had no clue what to do. Finally, one of my friends came in, and he saw that something was really wrong. Immediately, someone who normally is very joking, very jovial, His face was filled with concern. He said, "Brian, what's wrong?" I explained to him the situation, and he knew a little bit about it. He talked me through my emotions. He talked me through my grief. He was not rude. He was not sarcastic. His words were not just pray about it. His words were not have faith. But he empathized with me. He sympathized with me. His words were seasoned. They were gracious. Now, was it wrong to tell me to pray? No. But was that really what I needed to hear at the moment? No. Our words need to be seasoned. He probably doesn't remember that at all. That was about 10 years ago now. But that was one of the most meaningful things that anyone has ever done for me before. His speech was seasoned. Why? He knew what fit the occasion. Now, in other contexts, he was a hysterical individual. He was very sarcastic, very funny. We could joke around with each other. We could, you know, make fun of one another in good ways. We had a really good relationship, but why? He knew what the occasion called for. He knew that if we were out having a good time together, we could joke around, you know, we could have fun words with one another. We could play around with one another. That was fine. But when I was going through true emotional pain, when I was going through grief, that wasn't the time for it. His words were filled with wisdom. They were filled with grace. They were appropriate. They were appealing. And therefore, his speech was free. That was God-given speech. That was wise speech. That was gracious speech. What are our words? Brethren, we as Christians in our larger culture have a reputation of being vitriolic, of being rude, of being unempathetic, of being unsympathetic, and being downright mean with our language. That is not the call of the gospel. Free speech is gracious speech. Free speech is wise speech. Free speech is seasoned speech. Free speech is kind speech. Because, go with me to Titus chapter 1. There are times that we have to be severe. There are times that we must rebuke. But if that is the default of our tongue, rather than a last resort that we must go to as the occasion calls for it, our words lose meaning. Look at Titus 1:13 with me. This testimony is true. Therefore, rebuke them sharply, that they may be sound in the faith. 1 Timothy 5:20 and 2 Corinthians 13:20 say very similar thoughts. There are times that we are called to be sharp with our tongue. There are times that we must rebuke with our tongue. There are times that our tongues have to let out a sharp word. But brethren, may I recommend, if that is our default, and that's what we're known by, our words have no meaningfulness to them. Because anytime we open our mouth, people are just going to close off their ears because, oh, here he goes again. Verses, let me illustrate it to you this way. If as a parent, I say, Brooklyn, sweetheart, as she gets older, that's not what we need to do. Brooklyn, sweetheart, you did very well. Doll baby, you're doing great. You're doing wonderful, but sweetheart, we don't need to do that. Is that kind and gracious speech? Absolutely. Absolutely. But then what happens, and I'm praying this is a hypothetical that I never have to live through. But what happens when she's 16 and comes home drunk? Do not ever, ever put that vile substance in your body again and disgrace your God like that again. Ever. What if all the time I went around, don't touch that! Don't do that! Don't do that, child! Many parents are like that, sadly. Many Christians are like that, sadly. When our attitudes and our tongue and our language are filled with anger and wrath, when I truly need to use it, when the situation truly calls for it, Well, there goes Daddy again being a jerk. I'm going to not listen to him again. He's just being Daddy again. Time for him to cuss me out again. Brethren, there is a time, as the situation calls for it and as fits the occasion, that we must use language this sharp. There are times that we must rebuke with strong admonitions. But if our tongues are not filled with grace and wisdom and seasoning, that rebuke will have no meaning to it. I pray as a preacher that my language is filled with grace. There have been situations where I've had to rebuke sharply. In the face of sin, in the face of unrepentant sin, sin where grace has been tried over and over, yes, there's a time to rebuke sharply. But it first must be seasoned with graciousness. It first must be tried with wisdom. It first must be tried with kindness. So that then the sharp rebuke has its meaning. So what then is free speech? Constitutionally, free speech is saying whatever I want it to say. Legally, free speech is not perjuring myself and not saying anything within the federal domain of free speech. Spiritually, what is free speech? Free speech is speech that reaches its full God-given potential by having the content of truth and having a meaningfulness that comes through wisdom and grace. Is your tongue freed from sin? Or is it held and ensnared by the fires of hell itself? Held captive by Satan, held captive by his forces. Let it be freed by Christ. Let it be freed by his grace. Let it be freed by his wisdom. Get out your songbooks, please. I asked last week, is Christianity a straitjacket? Is Christianity a straitjacket? Well, when it comes to our speech, you could certainly view it that way, couldn't you? Normally, whenever someone comes out of the world, what's the first thing they say? I'm going to have to clean up my language. Almost every time I've spoken to anyone who comes out of the world, that is one of the first things they know they have to do. I'm going to have to clean up my language. I can't be dropping cuss words every other word anymore. I can't just be getting angry every other time anymore. I can't be mean all the time. I'm going to have to clean up my language. Is that a straitjacket? No, not at all. Yes, it is God-given limitations. But when we put on those God-given limitations, it liberates us to fulfill the true purpose of our tongue that God gave us, and that's to give Him glory. Our speech is never more meaningful than when we follow the dictates of Scripture. Our words are never more meaningful than when we follow the content and the style of Jesus Christ. Our communication and our speech are never more liberated than when we follow the gospel plan of speech. What are we going to do? Are we going to follow the societal dictates of free speech and say whatever I want to say in the way I want to say it? Or like Jesus, are we going to speak truth in graciousness and wisdom? It's not a straitjacket. It's liberty from sin. That's the power of the cross. In all theories of communication I spent studying 6 years in graduate school, not one could begin to compare with the power of the gospel. Because when we follow Jesus' words, the greatest of communicators who ever was, the living Word Himself, the Word who came from antiquity of old to eternity itself, that's when our speech is liberated. Maybe you're still captive in sin. Satan and his armies have you ensnared by sin. You need to put off those transgressions. You need to put off the weight of sin. And you need to be freed by his grace. If you want to be freed by the power of the cross, come forward while we stand and while we sing.